Darkness permeates every corner of my surroundings. Scurrying footsteps echo off of the walls, bouncing back and forth, making it impossible to track where they originate from. Giggles are alternatively let loose and stifled in equal measure, filling my ears with a horrific soundscape. My own pulse races, the sound of my rushing blood competing with the demonic laughing. Rough wood rests underneath my fingertips, and I try to focus in on that, using it as a beacon to call me back to myself. I'm calling from the glass eye. I don't know how long I've been here. Days, at least. My senses all feel dulled, and my mouth feels as though it's been filled with sawdust. I've been trying to track the time, but I haven't been able to perceive a cycle from day to night. There's just been a regular low light, the flickering of candles, the only illumination. And they've been far from constant. Much of the time I've been here, there's been no light whatsoever. Only rarely have any of the candles been lit, and even that has been irregular as to the quantity. Honestly, if it wasn't for the consistent chatter and disconcerting noises, I think I would prefer the darkness to the faintly flickering flames. The shadows cast by the candles create a nightmarish background across the room, allowing my imagination to run wild. I try to remind myself that I'm simply inside a doll shop, that I can't possibly be seeing bones or human hair or residual puddles of some sort of ichor. The more I try to tell myself that, however, the more I see and the more I imagine. I know that a few days at least have passed, because I spent at least two bound and gagged. I'm free to move and speak now, for all the good that will do me. My limbs feel leaden, unwilling to respond to my wishes. I just want to move, and they will not follow suit. I spent some time thinking that I had been sedated in some way, but surely I would have felt a needle or some other method to administer such a sedative to me. I felt nothing. Except cold. A bitter, stinging cold. One that settles into the bones and does not let go with its icy fingers. A cold that is more than the absence of heat, but one that resonates from inside out. Even with the cold, however, I am not afraid. Not for my extremities. Not for my flesh, tender and raw. Not even for my mind, which has been racing and concocting new scenarios with the stimuli I've been fed. One of the candles leaps to life again. I'm forced to squint against the sudden influx of light. My eyes had adjusted to the lack, so seeing the flame dance is almost offensive to me. I'm about to try to roll myself towards it to attempt to extinguish it when I see someone approaching me. someone, something, and some specific thing. Something that I haven't seen since I ventured back into the Owl's Nest Diner. Something that I knew was just for me, but I could never have imagined how it would exploit that fact. The doll that had been set for just me approaches out of the shadows. Its face is wearing a lopsided grin. Its clothing is almost clinical. And in its hand, glinting in the flickering candlelight, a shard of metal. Sharp, with a clear edge. I hear a voice in my head telling me to stay calm, and the candle blows out again.
The nest. I am comforted by the familiar surroundings. I have needed comfort for some time. Marcus brought me here, not even fully aware of why he was doing it. The important thing is that I'm here, and that somehow Marcus has been convinced to let me stay. Lorraine told him that it was important, and he listened. He asked if he should bring any of his other dolls to the nest, and she quickly shot down the idea. "Only the necessary," she said. And I almost felt a swell of pride at being called necessary. That swell of pride was quickly squashed when I realized that Marcus had asked about his other dolls. That answered the questions I'd had about what happened to me. I don't know how, but clearly I've been transformed. Or maybe my consciousness has somehow been transferred? I don't know, but it certainly doesn't make any sense. It is, however, the only answer that exists. I am trapped in the body of a doll. A doll that looks remarkably like me. I only know this because Lorraine insists on polishing the napkin dispensers to a mirror-like shine, and I caught a glimpse of myself in one of them when Marcus set me on the counter. Under other circumstances, I would probably be more impressed with the craftsmanship, but as things are, I don't really want to give any praise to the owners of the glass eye. Much of the time I've been here in the nest, it's been quiet. Lorraine has been bustling around, cat-like with her movements. Even her time in the kitchen has come with almost no noise, as though she's afraid of drawing any attention to herself. She has carried the doll she calls George around with her, transporting him from place to place. The bell over the door hasn't rung, except for when Marcus left on what he said was pressing business. This has given me plenty of time to myself. Or so you would think. Because my mind is not my own. There are other fingers reaching into it, faint whisperings that I catch at the very edge of my perception. I've tried to focus in on those whisperings, hoping to glean any piece of information I possibly can. I get overwhelming amounts of hunger. A hunger so strong that it sends pangs where my own stomach should be. There are moments of frustration boiling over towards anger. I home in on one of these, and oddly, the anger seems to focus on Marissa. I'm sure I've gotten my wires crossed somehow. She's one of the people behind this. Why would any of the anger I'm feeling be directed at her? There's also pity. I can't tell where that's directed, but it's there. And it's almost as strong as the hunger. What feels like hundreds of voices, starving and echoing through my mind, pushing forward a concept of pity. Pity for us? No, the more I probe, the more I can tell there is no pity for us. The pity is for their own that have fallen. The pity is for the ones like me. I try to make sense of this feeling, all while continuing the process of stretching my limbs into movement. I've made progress and can turn my head somewhat. My legs won't support me yet, but I'm sure that is to come. I've also almost croaked out a few simple syllables towards the rain, but there hasn't been enough volume to reach her ears. I need her help. Desperately, if my guess is correct. Because she knows where my basket is. And somehow, I know that I need to reconnect with it.
Pain. I feel overwhelming pain. My limbs are on fire, snapping back against the cold. I feel permeating every fiber of my being. My doll did something to me, something I can't describe. The blade in its hand flashed, but never actually touched me. With each flash, however, I felt pain. Sharp, stabbing, driving into my very soul, and leaving me shuddering at the thought of anything further. Then it left. Not the pain, the doll. My doll. The creation I had been so proud to get, because it meant that Marissa and Samantha had included me, accepted me. Odd that I would need that from them so much when they are the ones who are new to Elm Lake. I've been here as long as I can remember. Why would I need their approval so badly? But I needed it. I craved it. I felt so outside by not having a doll of my own, and now that I have one, I'm wishing I had never felt so excluded. Shame runs through me, accompanying the stabs of pain up and down my body. Thankfully, the darkness has been allowed to stay. No further candles have been lit. My nerves have been on fire for long enough that I'm questioning my own sanity. The only solace I have is that no images have been left to linger before my eyes. The torture is simply physical pain, slowly eroding my reality. A part of me prays for release, while the rest of me tells me that I don't deserve it. Through the pain, I can hear the scurrying footsteps, growing fainter. Leaving? The giggling has stopped completely. I feel a mind probing into my own, pushing an image of dismembered bodies, broken and torn apart. I recognize the bodies, but another stab of pain pushes away their names, leaving me unable to identify them properly. Left with that image, my mind is released, and a different light suddenly fills the room. I close my eyes. Another sharp stab rippling through my body. If this is the end, then I see no choice but to let it come. In some ways, I feel like I've always been waiting for this exact moment. Nothing happens. I open my eyes cautiously. Standing in the doorway, out of breath, is Amelia Ashford. I'm going to have to continue waiting. Calling from Elm Lake, episode 45, Cold, was written and produced by Sean Monahan. The voice of Elm Lake is Sean Monahan. The voice of Jenny Fowler is Emma Sala. Opening and closing themes written and performed by Sean Monahan. All other music written and performed by Matt McInnes. Find out more at machinismusic.com. Thank you for listening to our ongoing tale. If you've enjoyed our story so far, please leave a rating and review. Word of mouth will help us continue to grow and unfold new tales within our universe. You can also join us at www.patreon.com/callingfromelmlake to help support us as independent artists carving out our own space in this creative world. Life is not meant to be a cage, and cold is not meant to be our primary experience. This is why we seek out ways to counteract both of those elements, finding freedoms to allow us to simply be and to experience turns life from a cage into a rolling field. As for the cold, we constantly look for ways to counter it, whether it be through fire or mental engagements or the closeness of others. There's always a way to push it back. It is a tenacious opponent, which makes gathering allies and resources that much more satisfying.